sky.
I want to welcome you to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. We are now streaming live on the internet. Internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the listen button. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and underwriters like yourselves. So don't be shy if you like what we do. We need your support. We're totally supported by listeners and local people. It's all about having free, open media so we can bring you things that you need to know about. You can also go to KKRN to donate, and you click on the donate button there on our homepage. Unspun is a call-in show. We invite questions and comments from our listeners. Our number in the studio is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. We're streaming live, so you can also call in. If you're listening and you hear us on your computer, that means we're live on the air, so you can call in, 337-1885, 530, area code. You can also email me at unspun@kkrn.org. I do check that email account once in a while to see if you've got any comments. My host today is Mara Oliveira, a respected local activist, artist, producer of Small World Radio, creator of several websites, including geoengineeringwatch.org and smallworldradio.net. Mara is now acting as a reporter. He's out in the field. Earlier this month, he went to Creech Air Force Base in Nevada to report on and participate in the anti-drone protests there. The protests lasted for 3 days and resulted in the arrests of something like 60 activists, Mara?
34.
Oh, 34, which is still a large number. Mauro's making a documentary film. He took video while he was there. So, Mauro, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Creech and some of the people that were there with you at the drone protests at Creech Air Force Base in Nevada.
Good morning, everybody. Creech Air Force Base is the location of where the pilots sit and fly aircraft that are taking off and landing in the Middle East. So with a joystick sitting in a really plush leather chair, as if they were in front of a video game, there's a pilot and there's a special operations person next to them. So it's a two-seat operation. These guys sit in little tiny guys and women, by the way, sit in little tiny chambers. Some of them are portable, like a sea container that moves around, that's equipped to fly drones. And what these guys are doing at Creech is they got Hellfire missiles on their drones, and they fly around for days, go circle around a village, and they eyeball for what looks like a terrorist, or they may have a specific person they're looking for, and they fly around for days and sometimes, you know, for a week or so before they actually pull the trigger. And the problem is, as has come out in the news, only 1 in 28 of their targets are known who they are when they pull that trigger. So they're killing a lot of innocent civilians. And this is one of the biggest lies I've ever heard a president say, is when Obama says that we have a precision tool here. Because quite clearly, all over the world, everybody knows that that isn't so. But yet, you know, just like our unemployment rate, this is the figure coming out.
The other part of that is, of course, it's totally illegal. There's nothing in international law or the rules of war or anywhere else in our legal system that allows a president to just say, yeah, kill that person, most of them whom he doesn't really even know who they are. Somebody from the Pentagon and the CIA just says, yeah, I don't like his name. It starts with Mohammed. So, yeah, we know that it's totally illegal also. And then, as you say, there's 28 more innocent people killed besides the one that they target. And they don't even know if the one they target is actually
guilty.
Yeah,
there's one guy really high up in Al-Qaeda, whoever that is, that they've shot at 7 times, and he's still walking. Yet 140-some people have been killed in attempting to get this guy.
Yeah, I think there's been something like 500 innocents so far killed trying to get a few guys, and we're not even sure about the intelligence on them. So well, you had some people there, Creech,
incredible
that had firsthand
people.
Information about some of the drone pilots, and then also about some of the in-country like Afghanistan and Pakistan where these things were used.
One woman who was there, her name is Razia. She is very knowledgeable from you know, being on the ground and having friends that are constantly feeding her information. And we do have a clip of her speaking. Did you want to
Well, yeah, either that or we were going to go and talk about Brian talking to one of the
Brian is a Catholic worker.
Drone operators.
Yeah, he's very well known in this. He's been arrested many times. I think he's done quite a few months in jail for interfering with drone gates and, you know, trying to get in the press and stuff like that. So, yeah, Brian is a Catholic worker. He's with the Desert Experience, and he travels all over the country bringing attention to drones.
Yeah, Brian Terrell, right?
Right.
That's his last name. You want to introduce this clip about Brian talking to one of the drone operators?
Yeah, Brian was the last person I interviewed, and I basically said to him, Brian, imagine I have everything that I would need to edit this documentary. So give me something, you know, a little bit deeper and layer. And this is one of the juicy tidbits he gave us.
Okay, let's play this clip.
You know, one of the former drone operators who's been speaking out describes how, as for days and maybe weeks on end, he had the assignment that he would do his 12-hour shift, and we'd sit in the chair. He was assigned to watch two men, watch everything that they do. And then the end of his shift, he would get up from his chair, and somebody else would take it and continue to follow them day and night, days on end. He would come back in the next day and take over for his shift and watch these people. And after quite a long time, the order came. He was told that he needed to shoot and kill these two men. And he says he saw nothing himself to make him think that they were insurgents or any danger to anyone. But other people are watching the same video feed. And somebody in the CIA or somewhere in the military chain of command saw something, said, oh, these are bad guys. And he was ordered to kill them, and kill them he did. He said, I never saw anything to make me think that they were a threat to the United States, but I did see enough to know that they were good dads. And he was losing sleep over this. And I'm a pacifist. I don't believe in killing anybody, but I do understand a gigantic difference between killing somebody who's shooting at you and killing somebody who's 7,000 miles away, who could never be a threat to me or the people I love.
Yeah, I just want to mention, too, that the number of Catholics that are working this horrible scenario is very inspiring. There was Jerry Zawada, who is an almost 80-year-old Catholic priest, a Franciscan friar. Louis Vitale was there. He's about 90. And they were both arrested. And there was also several women priests that the Vatican has excommunicated because they're women. And they were there. And I just want to mention that these Catholic workers have been following this relentlessly. They are showing up anywhere there is a drone protest. They are making sure that this is staying in the news. And I'm very proud of these people.
I'm always amazed at the courage and the dedication of so many of these protesters. Some of them are just really well known and they're active. Basically they're dedicating their lives to trying to save the innocent lives that are being taken by the drones. You had another little clip from your documentary that you were talking about earlier before we started the show, and maybe you could introduce Ray and Barry talking a little bit more about PTSD, actually, something that a lot of Vietnam vets and now Iraqi war and Afghan war veterans are coming back with PTSD, about 30% of them. And we have a huge suicide rate. There's more military people have committed suicide now than the people lost in 9/11. So where's the game with all this military action and murdering people with little discrimination?
And they've discovered both the military and us, the civilians, have discovered the psychic torture that these drone pilots are going through, because they go home to their wives and kids every night, and they come back and they sit in an air-conditioned room in a nice plush leather chair, and they kill people. Yeah. And it isn't working, and they're resigning, they're getting out of duty, they're doing everything they can to get out of that chair. And the government, because they have to keep up such intense surveillance, they're requiring drone operators, a lot of them are working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, which you couldn't do in the civilians. But out in the Army, in the military, we push our people that hard.
Well, and the worst part is, where's the real threat? There's nobody here in America being threatened seriously. It's not a reality. Even though we've created more terrorists than ever actually existed before we started this war on terror. It's absurd, and it just feeds a huge war profiteering industry that's just out of control.
The drone program is probably doing more to create insurgents than anything else on this planet. This is enraging people. And when you really understand what you're paying for, U.S. taxpayer, you will feel it too, because there are more pictures on the internet of children with their heads blown off because of drones, then you'll find any other graphic situation. The drone program is creating more graphic content than anything I've ever seen. And Americans should be so appalled at what's happening with their money, because you're doing it. If you are not standing up against this, you are participating in it.
Well, you have a responsibility. And hopefully people listening to this will understand that. And take that responsibility. Call your senator or send President Obama a little note. We'll give some contact information later in the show.
So this is Barry.
Yeah, well, let me just do the show ID thing and invite people to call in. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Mara Oliveira in the studio with me today, co-hosting. We're talking about drone warfare and what the real advantages and disadvantages and how murderous and illegal it is. If you're interested in calling, taking part in this conversation, give us a call, 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Yeah, Mauro, why don't you go ahead and introduce this clip?
This is Barry Ladendorf. He's the president of Veterans for Peace. And there was as cars were going in and out, as drone pilots were going to work and from work, we were in their face at their gate, and Veterans for Peace was trying to hand them a letter. And a lot of cars were rolling down their windows and taking the letter. And this is Barry Ladendorf explaining what's in that letter. And the second voice you're going to hear is a gentleman named Ray, who has killed many people in war. And you're going to feel him.
Okay, so here's Barry and Ray telling you what they're doing and part of their stories.
The letter that we're trying to hand out here is a message from Veterans for Peace, for us as veterans, to these active duty people, that we understand the situation that we're in. We were all in that situation. Those of us who were in Vietnam, those of us who were in Iraq, those of us who were in Iran and Afghanistan, we understand what they're facing. And we're asking them to reflect on what they're doing, the way some of us didn't take the time to do that until we were out, until it was over. And then we began to feel the guilt, and we began to understand the impact that the U.S. military is having around the world. What we're asking them to do is just to open their hearts and minds to the message that we're trying to give to them, and to reflect on what they're doing. And that if they think, like I think many of them do deep down, that this is not where they want to be, we can help them to get rid of what they have to do. We can help them find ways to remedy the situation that they're in, and we'd be happy to do that.
I have a lot of shame.
This is Ray.
That I live with. So it gives me a lot of heart to come out with my brothers and sisters of all ages. We've got some teenagers here and young people that have served in Iraq and Afghanistan occupations. And it gives us heart as people that have participated in illegal warfare.
Yeah, that's pretty hard. We're looking at a movie clip from Morrow's documentary. It's pretty hard to watch. You don't probably have the full effect on the radio, but I think you can understand that this is a man that's still suffering after he was in Vietnam, right?
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of Creech. There was so many men that were carrying that, and that's what's driving them there. These men will pick up, they'll leave their jobs, they will go anywhere in the country to reach out to a drone pilot and try to stop this. Not only because of their tax money, but because they know what this man's going to go through. And you know, one thing I almost always say at the beginning of this topic is, this is a topic we don't have time for. We should be way beyond this by now. We had our 60s. We had the flower children. We had the other wars that we stood up against. If we are going to solve climate change and solve the sixth great extinction and ocean acidification, we have got to put this behind us. But this is pointing to exactly what our big problem is, the apathy and acceptance that the human beings are living right now. And I don't know if it's from GMOs or fluoride in the water, but one thing's for sure, we are allowing things to happen in our name that we wouldn't allow.
Well, not only that, but all the money, huge amounts of money. I mean, a small drone is like, what, $14 million or something. Some ridiculous amount of money is flowing into the wrong pockets. People not interested in your life, my life, or anything we think, or how we're going to have to live and survive. They don't give a damn about us, quite honestly. And, you know, I quote George Carlin, but I get thrown off the air, but they don't give a damn about us. They care about money. And these are the people that are taking your tax dollars to support you or to supposedly support you and supposedly protect you against an enemy that is not capable of harming you. It's insane, but it's all about money, I think.
It is all about money. And I bet, you know, as Brian pointed out, you know, the drone pilot is looking at his video feed, but so is the CIA and some guys in the NSA. They're the ones saying, hey, kill that guy, even though the pilot's going, why? And because I think those guys, the CIA and NSA guy, they have a schedule to keep. They got to shoot a Hellfire missile every so often so the funding can keep rolling. And I'm sure that's what's really driving this, is they got to every now and then shoot something off. And every time they do, they create more insurgents. So in the future, they're going to have to shoot more because they are creating a lot of terrorists.
They are. And that just makes them more money. And the other thing is that it's not just terrorists that they're using these drones on. The people in Yemen who have risen up against their dictatorial government and trying to take their country back now are being targeted at the request of the dictator in Yemen so he can get back in power. So we're murdering people illegally around the world for dictators and crooked governments and just about, you know, it's just absurd the way we're using these things. And it's not – nowhere is it legal. It's only because we're allowing it and our government allows it and promotes it so somebody else can get rich. Well, let's Morrow and I interviewed. Morrow was on the ground and he was finding me some really great activists to talk to, and I recorded some of those. And one of those people was Anne Wright. You had a chance to talk to her, right, Morrow? And
yeah.
Just outstanding.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she's been a peace activist ever since she quit the State Department after a long career, I think 30 years in the military, retired as a lieutenant colonel out of the Army, I believe. And so she was there at Creech with Morrow and hundreds of other activists in a three-day protest. So I want to play this little interview I did with her on the phone through Morrow's phone while he was on the ground there. So this is Lieutenant Colonel Anne Wright, a really inspiring peace activist. So I'm going to play this clip from her right now.
Hello, this is Anne Wright.
And Colonel Anne Wright, retired. This is Doug Bennett with Unspun, an experiment of truth-telling on KKRN Community Radio. Glad to have you on the air with us.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
Well, you're a longtime activist. In fact, we met, I think, in 2004 at the Veterans for Peace Convention up in Washington. I don't know if you remember that. Ray McGovern was there, another good friend of ours.
Yes.
You're a longtime activist, and I just want to say up front that we really
just
appreciate you, what you're doing. Are you there?
Thank you. We've got two radio interviews going on at one time, and I just passed one to another person. Just one second.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Hello.
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 Hello, it's Anne Wright.
Hi, Anne. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, glad to have you on Unspun, an experiment of truth-telling. I was saying that we had met, I think, in 2004 at the Veterans for Peace conference at Washington University, along with Ray McGovern, and Dar Jamal was there. And,
oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was early on in your career as a peace activist, and you've had a varied career. I don't know. Are you part of Code Pink, or do you act? Are you acting as an individual, or
no?
Some
I
other?
Work with anybody that's for peace. I'm with them. Code Pink Women for Peace. You know, such a dynamic group and creative group, and Veterans for Peace, where we bring the veterans' voice to play on issues of peace. So I work with all of them.
Well, I'm glad that you're there, because you've been such an advocate and so outspoken. A lot of our listeners may not know, so I'm just going to bring up a few things that you've been involved in, and then maybe you can tie it all together with what you're doing now. I know you were on the flotillas to try to break the blockade at Gaza, among many other things you've done since your career started. Well, why don't we go there? How did your career start? You were in the State Department, is that right?
Well, first I was in the U.S. military for almost three decades, and retired as a colonel from the Army Reserves. And then I was with the U.S. State Department for 16 years and served in U.S. embassies in Nicaragua, Grenada, Somalia, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Sierra Leone, Micronesia. I helped reopen the U.S. embassy in Afghanistan in December of 2001. And then I was in U.S. embassy in Mongolia in 2003 when I resigned in opposition to the war in Iraq.
So that was your beginning, was as a way to protest the illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq.
That's right. That's what propelled me into the activist circles. It wasn't that during the entire time that I worked for the government, which was most of my adult life, I didn't believe every single thing that all of these eight different presidential administrations that I worked under, I didn't believe all the things that they were saying, and didn't agree with a lot of the policies that were going on, but I never resigned over them. I found other places that I could do work that I felt was reasonable and not hurting people. But with the Iraq War, I finally said I cannot be a part of that one. And since then, since 2003, I've been working with organizations and then independently, too, as a voice of someone coming out of the government and saying that government policies, war policies, are not the way that we ought to be going.
I think you were among a lot of people then that reacted to that war. That's what really got me off the couch back in 2002 and 2003, actually the run-up to the Iraq War, with all the lies and everything that was going on prior to that. That really got me off the couch and got me started as an activist, and now I'm behind a microphone as an activist. So
well, it's so important. I mean, people who are in the media can help us move the voices and the issues so much more widely when we do have an opportunity to speak with the community through a community radio station. So we really appreciate activists who are taking the time to work at studios and on community newspapers to help us get information out to others so that we can hopefully influence their view on what social justice issues are that we as a community are dealing with.
Well, let's talk about what you'd like to see happen because of what's going on there at Creech and all the efforts put out by activists and protesters. What would you like to see happen with the drone program?
Well, I think this assassin drone program that the U.S. has, both with the U.S. military and the CIA, is a very dangerous program for the United States. It's dangerous for our national security. And despite what two administrations have said, both the Bush administration and the Obama administration, that these drones save lives, save American lives, I think, in fact, they are. These programs are killing Americans that our government professes that they want to protect. And it certainly is, I mean, they're killing them because people around the world are outraged about what they see America doing. And in places like Afghanistan, where we, in the last 2 years, we've had more American military killed on what they call green on, blue on green, Afghan police and military that we have trained, turning their weapons on the trainers, on the U.S. trainers. And when you really get down to the bottom of it, many of these people who are killing American soldiers there come from the tribal areas in Afghanistan along the Pakistan border, which is the primary target area for the U.S. drones. So they've had members of their families that have been killed by these drones, and they're taking action against the U.S. because of it.
This would be expected, especially if you understand the Afghan and Pakistani cultural values. I think they're pretty much an eye for an eye type cultural values. And, I mean, the number – what is the estimated number of innocent people that has been acknowledged or that we know of from these drone strikes?
Well, first I would like to say that it's just not a cultural thing of Afghanistan and Pakistan. I think an eye for an eye is an attribute of the United States of America. The retribution and retaliation that the United States of America takes against anyone cannot be rivaled in the world. Neither the Pakistanis nor the Afghans have killed nearly as many people as the United States of America has killed. So an eye for an eye is a part of the cultural heritage of the United States, in my opinion.
I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying that it's to be, maybe I should say it's a human, more of a human condition.
It is, and trying to change cultures, our own first, and that's where we're really working hard to try to get our politicians to start with to say that there has to be something different from an approach to solving international problems than using a military solution. Using the military, which never is the solution. It just causes more and more problems, as we're seeing with the outgrowth of all sorts of new militant groups that are coming to the forefront in the places where the United States has been operating in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iraq, and Syria, and Libya. All these places, are in chaos because of what the United States has done in the last 10 years there. So trying to get our politicians to look at a new model of how you approach international relations is one of our great challenges.
Well, it seems to be their answer for everything. Force seems, even the small attempts coming up with peaceful solutions like what's going on with Iran. You saw the reaction of our Congress and what's going on. We're so invested in the Pentagon and so much of the cash flow in America centers around warfare and war profiteering. So we're kind of addicted, I think, to war. And I hope, what you're saying I agree with. I think we somehow have to get them to understand that it's not a solution at all. But my thinking is that they knew it was not a solution when they started it. I think their intent was to increase terrorism around the world, including state terrorism, and because that's profitable. So, and we see that in Guantanamo and, the logic behind all of those things was not a logic to somehow have a victory and come out the other side with some sort of peaceful resolution. It never has been, as far as I can see.
Yeah, I think you're right. Listen, I'm going to have to scoot on. We've got some actions that are right here that are part of our week here at Creech that I've got to be a part of. So let me thank you so much for your covering this. We really do appreciate it. And there are lots more people here that will have some great voices for you to hear from. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Ann. And good luck in your actions there.
Should I mention my book?
Sure. And any website, real quick.
Yeah. Several years ago, I co-authored a book called Dissent, Voices of Conscience. And it's the stories of men and women of our government, both military and civilian, that have spoken out strongly, taken acts of conscience, whether it's resignation or challenging, if they're in the military, saying, I refuse to go to Iraq or to Afghanistan, and being court-martialed. And their statements of conscience of why they challenged the U.S. government is what propelled me to put them all together in a book called Dissent, Voices of Conscience.
Okay, and I'll find a link for that and put it in our archives here along with the show when we do it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ann.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With me today in the studio is Mauro Oliveira. And we're talking about drone warfare and not truly local, but activism here in America that's trying to stop this extrajudicial, which is another term for outside of the law, this whole operation of unmanned aircraft murdering people around the world in our name. And we're going to come back to that discussion here in just a minute, but I do have a little public service announcement to announce here, and this is for next Saturday, about the same time. I think it's from 10 to 4 at the Reading City Hall and all of the City Hall grounds. There's the Whole Earth and Watershed Festival. It's in its ninth year. It's really a worthwhile event, and because there's all kinds of people there that are representing good ideas for the earth, and there's also people you can get information from about recycling and other things that you can do to help Mother Earth. So go to that. That's next Saturday from 10 to 4. There's also the farmers markets open at the same time, so you can do your shopping, get some good, healthy, organic veggies and other things there. So 10 to 4 next Saturday, April 25th, at Reading City Hall, the Whole Earth and Watershed Festival. Well, back to our discussion here. Mauro, you were there for 3 days. You met some really wonderful activists. Oh, but before we go into that, I want to say what our phone number is if you want to call in, 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. That you can comment, you can criticize, whatever, join the conversation. We love to take your calls. So, Mauro, 3 days there, you saw a lot, you experienced a lot, you videoed a lot for your documentary you're going to make. Maybe you can tell us some more about some of the protesters and the people that were there and what they had to share.
There was a lot of Veterans for Peace. There was a lot of gray hair there. There was a lot of Vietnam vets and Iraq and Afghanistan vets. And there was a lot of men there who killed. And that's the thing. That's what was bringing them there, is their conscience.
Yeah, we have a caller. I don't know who it is yet, but I'm going to bring them on. But you mentioned Riza, Riza?
Riza and Shirley Osgood is the next clip we have.
Okay, well, we have Rocky is on the phone.
Right.
And Rocky, I know, has some stories to tell us, and he's also a Veteran for Peace. And let's get Rocky on the air with us. Rocky, you're on the air.
Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Rocky. Good to have you on with us.
Hey, I just want to say I really appreciate you and Mauro and your efforts to get the message out there. And, you don't go unheard, that's for sure. But I want to just make a couple of comments. One on your statement of the U.S. policy of an eye for an eye. I think it would be more accurate to say two eyes for an eye.
Yeah, you make a good point.
And, you know, the problem I keep confronting in mentally trying to resolve the situation is I think this thing is bigger than the political base in the United States. I think it goes beyond that to an international level. And I'm not a Bible thumper or anything, but there's an interesting verse in the Bible that says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities and power and spiritual wickedness in high places.
Yeah, you'll have to send me a link to that quote or give me that's an interesting quote, yeah. And did you want to share a little bit of your experience? I know you were a Vietnam vet.
I can tell you a quick story. I was with the 1st Cav, 229th Assault Helicopter Battalion, Charlie Company. We got a Nighthawk. That's when the night vision equipment first started being used. And this Nighthawk unit was a gigantic spotlight with a minigun that fired 5,000 rounds a minute, connected to an infrared scope. And it was mounted in a 205, which was the Huey troop carrier utility helicopter. But that was put together to fly the Ho Chi Minh Trail out of Tay Ninh province and going into the Saigon area. And so when we first started using this aircraft, they were getting incredible body counts, like 20, 25, 30 KIAs a night. And it seems so high. You know, I mean, that doesn't sound high in terms of a big war, but for a company and a battalion, that's a pretty high body count on a nightly basis. And so they were a little bit skeptical, so they put in a ground scout unit to check it out. Sure enough, the body count was accurate. The only thing was over half of the bodies were women and children that were conscripted to push the bicycle and supplies along the Ho Chi Minh Trail through that particular area. And so a lot of us pilots, we didn't like it and refused to fly, you know, so this isn't right. And so they stopped it for a week and got a chain of command to make a decision. So it went to General Forsyth, who was the commander of the 1st Cav at that time. And about a week later, it came back, and his directive was continue to fly the missions on a voluntary basis because anybody out there is the enemy. And, you know, as horrible as that is, the worst part of that is there were no shortages of pilots willing to fly that night mission and kill innocent people.
And not much has changed. I think the people in power always like to tell us that, you know, it's necessary and we're very accurate and we're not killing people. But the reality is we kill far more innocent people than we do any combatants, I think, in any war, especially the kind of warfare that we're waging today. So
that's right. And it's a purposeful thing. You know, it's like they know what they're doing. It's purposeful. It's about money and power.
And it's state terror. When we do it, it's a good thing. When somebody else does it, it's terrorism. So
exactly. I know how I would feel if a drone flew over here and killed one of my family. I would spend my last breath trying to track down the SOB that did that.
Yeah.
So I can relate to the way these so-called terrorists feel. You know, you're fighting against a superpower, and you're helpless.
Yeah, you can do only so much.
I think Che Guevara had it right. You know, we're living in the belly of the beast. Now, if you guys can figure out how to crush the head, let me know. I would be glad to join you.
Okay, Rock. Well, we got a couple other things and somebody else calling in. So thank you for calling and sharing that information. And I think a lot of Vietnam vets feel the same way.
You bet, Doug. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's probably Cress Vellucci right there.
Yeah, we have somebody, Cress Vellucci, is coming on with us, who's another. I'll let Mauro do a little intro for Cress, and I'll be bringing him on while Mauro's doing that.
Cress is a name that you can say anywhere on the West Coast, and activists will light up. I first heard this man's name during the Occupy movement when I had his phone number written on my arm in case I got arrested. He is well trained in the legal field, although he chose not to take the bar. And I think he did that so he wouldn't have the restrictions as a lawyer has in a courtroom. But this is Cress Vellucci, and he's responsible for putting out a national ad which for the first time shows blown up children on TV. And so, good morning, Cress.
Yeah, welcome to Unspun and Experiment in Truth Telling.
Good morning.
Yeah, you're on the air. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you. You were at the Creech protests with Morrow, and I know you're involved in a lot of other things.
Actually, Chris wasn't there.
Oh, I thought he was.
No. He was working on... Chris, why don't you just take it from here?
Yeah,
tell us about your
head.
I was going to say I would have liked to have been there, but I was there virtually. I was doing the support work, media work for the activists who are on the ground at Creech. And at that very same time, we were, as Morrow knows, I was working with Cox Cable in the Las Vegas area to finally get them to agree to air these anti-drone television spots. It wasn't an easy task. I will admit that it took about 2 weeks to get them to agree to put these things on the air, and came right down to the wire. I mean, I think Morrow, the ads started running that Monday of the week you guys were out there. So it was. We tried to do it earlier, but for some reason it just worked out that Cox was reluctant. They kept saying the ads were, and we've heard this term used several times by cable companies, the ads are quote-unquote disturbing, which of course they are disturbing. I mean, they're not bloody necessarily, they aren't gory, but they are disturbing because you actually see, in the 15-second spots, you actually see a drone firing, locking down on a target, firing, and then the rubble, and then dead children in the picture. So while they're not bloody, the impression is in just those 15 seconds that the drones are killing people.
It's fantastic that you were able to get them to push the envelope like that. And I think what's going to happen here in the future is we're all going to be able to air more graphic content because of this push that you've done. And we need to. People need to see what they're paying for.
Yeah, that was one of the things in Vietnam that brought Vietnam to a close, was the fact that people were seeing the gore and what went on in Vietnam and the innocent children and women that were victims. And that was effective in the world then. We're a little bit now. We're so diversified in the media, and people have 300 channels, and they've got YouTube and everything else, and they're not really well informed. I don't know if you heard Rocky. He was on the air before you came on. He was a Vietnam vet, but
so am I. So am I, by the way. So
yeah.
In fact, as a draftee, I was a 19-year-old kid. What did I know? I was very unpolitical. It's hard to believe, but in the 60s, but I was. And just so you guys know, I mean, you're talking about the message in Vietnam. I mean, I had a choice when I got over there. They said, "Hey, you can either carry that M16, or since you were a newspaper reporter, you can work in the information office." So my time was spent putting together stories that would mask what was really happening over in Vietnam. I didn't really realize that at first, but after a while, I saw that I was doing stories about, you just mentioned this, about orphans and children had their parents were killed. And our stories, of course, that the military put out were about how we were taking care of them, how we cared about them, really just one side of the story. The other side of the story that we couldn't tell, that I can hopefully be part of telling today with the drones, is that these young children were orphaned because of our bombing missions. So it's kind of a weird thing, 40-something years later, that I'm on the other end of providing the full, unfiltered truth to the American public, not the one-sided government view.
Yeah, that type of information we call propaganda.
It's funny you mentioned, I actually wrote a small piece a couple of years ago, and the headline that I put in was for a magazine, was I was a government propaganda expert in Vietnam. So, but you know, it gave me a good feeling. Again, I was a young reporter, got drafted, spent a couple of years in the military. But when I came out, I spent roughly another 15, 20 years in the news business as a mainstream news reporter at the Capitol and other places. But it gave me a different perspective about the information that was being given us by government sources. And in the end, though, honestly, in the 90s, I quit the news business. I was bureau chief of a wire service, and I said, you know what, I can't regurgitate lies to the public any longer. So I left, and I started really working in this area. So,
And work you have, Chris. incredible amount of work you've done. I want to thank you personally for almost any protest or event that I was involved, direct action. Your name was there or you were there. So thank you.
Well,
the ad I saw was mentioned in Pravda. So we're getting international attention because of what you've done.
Well, yeah, you know what's interesting is that of course, we had a news conference and drew no media that day, which is kind of unusual, even though it was up at Beale Air Base, kind of in the middle of nowhere. But the first coverage we received came from Russia Today, the television station out of the Soviet Union, obviously, or out of Russia. A very objective piece. It wasn't one-sided. In fact, if anything, it aired the pro-drone view as long as we were equally as far as I'm concerned. But The Guardian ran a piece about that same time. That was international as well. And now we've, since that time, picked up a lot of, relatively speaking, a lot of U.S. coverage and local coverage. Sacramento Bee, McClatchy News did a piece a week or so ago, and I was just actually contacted by a reporter from The Guardian the other day who said that they wanted to do another piece as we expand out this campaign throughout the United States, not just in Creech and not just at Beale. So it'll eventually catch on. It's unusual, but I think it's important, and this is part of the comments that I make to progressive activists, whether it's anti-war or pro-environment, et cetera, is that they have to consider using more mainstream media to get the message out, because the problem or the situation is that the average voter, and I say voter, not person, but the average voter still gets the majority of their news and information from television. And it's important for us to do this. Plus, we don't have to depend on a quote-unquote balanced story when we try to get free news coverage. What we can do, as in this case, is simply show the unfiltered truth to the American public, and I think that's really important.
The mainstream media, as we call it these days, or the corporate media, or what is it that, I think
traditional media.
Ray McGovern calls it the fawning corporate media, has really let us down terribly. So it's great that you're doing what you're doing. But I've noticed even the print media that is supposed to have been reliable, the New York Times has basically turned into a propaganda rag. If you look at the coverage of Ukraine and what's going on in anywhere in the Middle East, you're not getting the story. You're not getting the truth from any of our main news sources anymore.
Well, it's unfortunate. And I speak from again as a traditional or mainstream media person for most of my life, and again, this is part of the reason I left the Capitol is that I could do a few good pieces, but for the most part, what you're doing is covering news conferences put on, of course, by the governor or certain lawmakers or other governmental entities, and you're forced in a way to cover those things, even though you know, and I certainly did, most reporters know this, that you're being lied to. I mean, you try to balance these things out, you try to get another side, but in the end, at least part of what you're doing on a regular basis is just putting out propaganda. I mean, it's a difficult situation. I couldn't do it any longer. I quit, and that was the main reason I resigned after all those years. I know I had other reporters that said to me, "Hey, Chris, it's just a job." And I said, "You know what? I just can't be part of this situation any longer." And it's a very frustrating situation. But another problem with print, to be somewhat fair about it, is that when I worked at the Bee, we had give or take, roughly 90 people on the news staff, from photographers to copy editors. And now, if they have a quarter of that, I would be surprised. I mean, so your news staffs are down to really minimal amounts. Television news crews pretty much the same way. And so it's easier to cover a murder in a freeway accident than it is to cover something like this. So I'm not making excuses for it. I'm just saying that there's additional reasons. And, of course, the lazier reporters are, or the more time-crunched they are, the easier it is for corporate PR guys to manipulate them, and that's what happens.
So what's the next step with the drone warfare protest and your attempts to get the information out to the public? What are you going to do next? And is there some way that the public can help help you with the costs? Is there a website or something where donations can be sent?
Right. The best website, and I should say this, that No Drones, that's K-N-O-W, D-R-O-N-E-S.com, nodrones.com, is the best place to go to get information and to contribute. Nick Mottern with No Drones actually is the fellow activist who's working on this with me, and honestly, he collaborator. That's a good word. but you know, he. I will admit it. We talked about this probably a year ago. At least I talked about it. So he picked up on it, and honestly, as Marlon knows, there's a lot of things going on. So over a period of several months, it seems like every other day I get an email from him saying, "Hey, what about those ads?" So he raised the bulk of the money to get these on the air. He got Creech, but it's expanded beyond that now. So what we're doing, we're looking at, in fact, I can tell you this first, the ads will be running in the Syracuse, New York area starting around the 1st of May, around Hancock Air Base, the Drone Operations Center there, and then moving over to New Mexico and I think another facility somewhere in New York. But beyond those drone operation centers, what we hope to do is just show these generally to the public. In Sacramento, per se, although we don't have a drone base here, we're raising money to put the spot on the air. And the advantage of that. Oh, okay. So I was just going to say that the advantage of putting them on the air in a general area is that everybody can be educated.
Chris, are you going to be at Beale on the 28th?
I'm going to try to be.
Yeah, there's Kathy Kelly, for our listeners, Kathy Kelly, who's just come out of prison for doing 3 months for protesting drones. She will be at Fort Beale. There will be another protest, and Brian Terrell will be there, and we're asking the public to come. We're also asking the public to go to your GoFundMe site and put in a couple dollars, because we can easily raise $5,000 in a couple of days if everybody just puts in a few dollars.
Well, Chris, I want to. We've only got 1 minute, so a couple of last words from you, and then you're going to hear some music coming in the background, and that's our cue to shut it down. So, any last words for people that have a conscience and want to do something about this?
Well, yeah, I would just second what Marlon just said, and that is that, you know, your money can go really a long way. For instance, very quickly, $20 or $25 will buy one or two spots on primetime CNN or MSNBC or some other network channel. It's really very inexpensive because we're buying by the zone. It's not like $1 million per spot. It's very inexpensive. So every dollar really does count. So if you send $25 in, you can actually see one or two spots because of that. It's really a worthwhile effort, and it's a way we can get the truth out to the American public.
Well, that's our cue, our music to sign off. So I want to thank you once again for all your work and what you're doing out in the world today. And so thanks for being on Unspun with us.
No problem.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Well, that's our music to sign off. You've been listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling today. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With me in the studio has been Mara Oliveira, local activist, website, documentarian, artist, so many talented things that he does. So I want to thank you, Mara, for being on.
Thank you.
And for helping me do the show today.